Hello, good evening, and welcome to Farming News and Views here on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. Farming News and Views is brought to you in association with the Farming Independent, first for Farming News and Views, every Tuesday. The ongoing IFA payment saga is dominating the headlines once again this week, and it will surely be a major topic at the next meeting of the County Donegal Executive of the IFA. I've been speaking to Pat O'Toole, news correspondent with the Farmers Journal, to get his views on the report this week into the high pay revelations conducted by the IFA former chief economist Con Lucy, and also the motion of no confidence in the executive board of the IFA, which was defeated after the board met for nearly 12 hours to consider the report.
We've got most of the detail of Pat Smith's remuneration previously. It brings it back to 2009, fills in some of the gaps. We can see how his bonus was enveloped into his basic pay in 2010 and how that increased the pension provision and the pension liability of the association to him. We also saw that in 2009 what was known as a top hat facility was put in place, effectively topping up his pension by 10% on an annual basis to allow an early retirement, ironically. I suppose the issue that was most shocking in terms of pay was this, the discovery that the successive presidents received a bonus payment of a fifth year's pay on leaving office. So they got 5 years' pay for their 4 years of service. Yeah. Both John Bryan and Patrick Walsh received this, effectively giving them the bones of €1 million for their service as president of the IFA. And I think that farmers would find that quite shocking.
Yeah, I mean, farmers have always held the president in very high esteem, and it was generally felt they were putting in Trojan efforts, huge commitment, and they were being compensated for a loss of income. But not only were they being compensated for a loss of income and having to get people into their farm, but they were being rewarded way beyond what was required.
Well, I think it's the disconnect between what they were getting and what farmers earned. No reflection of farm incomes. When you have farm incomes of 25,000 and the president on 150,000 odd a year. There was also the element of secrecy. Nobody knew what the president was on except the general secretary. No one knew what the general secretary was on except the president and the treasurer, who is bound by the restrictions of his office to secrecy, or else he would expose the association to massive liability. So successive presidents went into office, discovered that this money was available to them and accepted it.
Was it a case that it was only when the president actually was elected and in office that he found out what his predecessor was on and was able to really negotiate his own package, or what way did it pan out?
We don't know. The only people who know that really are the general secretaries and the presidents, but that's the narrative we're hearing, that successive presidents went in and were told, this is available, you might as well take it, you're entitled to it, you work hard, and by the way, sign here to sign off on my pay, it's the same as last year. That was the extent of it. And just no structures in place. I suppose if you want to be sympathetic, you can say that these were presidents who were coming in having spent huge amounts of money getting elected. Campaigns have become high cost and very intensive, and they're shattered and elated, overwhelmed by the level of detail involved in the office, and suddenly this is put in front of them, and it's probably a very vulnerable time, financially exposed, and fresh with the joys of success and the pressures of office. So that seems to be how it evolved. The lack of decent corporate governance meant that it exploded from, say, when John Donnelly, who was the last president, we talked to every single living president, and John Donnelly went on the record with us, as did his predecessors, and John told us he was on 25,000. Now, I'm not sure if that's net or gross, but he was on 25,000 from 1993 to 97 a year. There's a gap because Tom Parlin, John Dillon and Patrick Walsh did not talk to us, but John Bryan did, and we now know that Patrick Walsh actually earned more than John Bryan when president. Yeah. They were the boom years. We also know that there's no comparison between the pay of the president and the deputy president. when Paddy Walsh was on over 150,000, Derek Dean was on 50. Eddie Downey was on 30,000, or sorry, 30,000 as deputy president, and Tim O'Leary is currently on 35,000. So I think most farmers would say that that's tolerable, as opposed to the pay of the general secretary and the president. And I think the last point on pay is that Con Lucy states that, in his opinion, the pay of the rest of the staff is within the bounds of what you would expect and is benchmarked against their counterparts in the Department of Agriculture. That's the first part. The second part is that he details and itemises the level of pay of and of expenses to all other officers, whether they're commodity chairman or county chairman, and it's very modest. It really is restricted to the very upper levels.
IFA Telecom, general consensus, it was a good idea, a percentage of profits from making your phone calls and whatever people thought were probably all going back to the IFA, but not quite the case. Pat Smith getting something in the region of up to 35,000 a year.
As was James Kelly last year, as was Ken Heed, who is the financial controller of IFA. They're itemised in Con's report. I presume and Pat Smith got nothing for the last 2 years since Ger Bergen stepped in as treasurer, refused to sign off. I don't know where all that ends, but Con Lucy has made a clear recommendation that no one should be receiving over and above any payment over and above their basic from linked companies such as IFA Telecom, and that the money should be going back into farmers. Now, in fairness to Pat Smith, he set up IFA Telecom, and it was his baby, and he drove it hard. It's making significant money, which is delivering revenue for IFA. Yeah. It's a clever idea. IFA is exploiting the depth of its membership base to generate funds for the association's use. The problem is that culture of entitlement pervaded here again, and these bonus payments, it's the kind of culture we associate with banking, not with voluntary organisations.
Two more points, Pat. Firstly, in terms of the presidential election, what's the latest on that now? Is it looking like it's going to be put back maybe 5-6 months down the road?
I don't think... There's two schools of thought. Certainly, the Rules and Privileges Committee are bringing a motion to the next meeting of the Executive Council on the 5th of January, and they're saying that they want the flexibility to hold it past the 60-day limit, which would be the 25th of January would be the limit under the rules of the association from when Eddie Downey stepped down. That's probably too tight a window. I can't see it being possible to hold an election by the 25th of January, not with 950 branches, with the need for hustings. The nominations don't close until the 6th of January. There will be an election, that much we know. Tim O'Leary is in the race. He stepped down as president, as acting president, to allow himself contest the presidency. Michael Silk from Galway is in the race. I understand Henry Burns will be declaring his candidacy tonight at the Laois Executive. Flor McCarthy of Kerry, Tim Cullinan of Tipperary, and of course Derek Dean and Carlo are all live candidates. So we will have a race. March, April is more likely than May, June. I would think March, April is the most likely time for the election.
Right. And finally, there was that motion of no confidence in the executive board of the IFA. That was defeated, but there's no doubt about the long-term damage. In terms of IFA membership, a lot of farmers, they mightn't want to renew their membership, but down the road, are they going to go, do you think, to other organisations, or will they come back to the IFA?
It's a good question. A lot will depend on how the IFA continue to respond to the situation they're now in, staff and officers. The Lucy report is now going back to the 29 executives for consideration. I'm not quite sure when going or when Donegal meet. But there's a lot in the report, and I think it takes a bit of digesting and a bit of further analysis. Ger Bergen said today to us, because Ger is now effectively the acting president. He's taken on the title of chairman of the Executive Council. And Ger said that, in his opinion, that the Lucy report is the start of the process, not the conclusion of it. and that transparency will be provided on all issues until the membership is satisfied that the ship has been righted. And once that's done, then, of course, all the time working on the day-to-day issues, because IFA membership is based on the representation of farmers, and at the moment the rest of the journal, other than the pages I was working on, is about delayed payments, late BPS payments, flooding, milk price, pig prices, climate change and what happened in Paris and the effects that's going to have on agriculture, all the kind of day-to-day issues that the IFA are engaged in. And of course today the beef forum, which ended in some disarray, I think. And, you know, the relationship between farmers and factories is deteriorating again. So that's the bread and butter stuff that the IFA must do. But they've got to fix the structures. They've got to implement the Lucy report to retain the credibility with their own membership.
Pat O'Toole, news correspondent with the Farmers Journal. In other farming news, James Murphy, IFA's renewable project team chairman, has described the government's white paper on Ireland's future energy plans as an important framework, which for the first time recognises the important role of communities in energy production. He believes that renewables will assist Ireland to deliver EU energy and climate obligations. However, he stressed that this must not take place at the expense of communities. Communities who are in the vicinity of projects must also be offered the right to become part owners in these projects, he said. And he added, the days of developers imposing projects on rural communities must end. ICSA President Patrick Kent is demanding action on a number of key issues which are of urgent concern to beef farmers. Following the Beef Forum talks in Dublin, he said that top of the ICSA's agenda is the need for Agriculture Minister Simon Coveney to seek out new international markets for live cattle exports. Also high on the agenda is the blockage of live exports to the UK due to the misuse of EU country of origin labelling by UK supermarkets, as well as the price differential between UK and Ireland cattle. Mr. Kent also sought answers as to the value of Bord Bia to Irish beef farmers. The Minister for Agriculture, Food and Marine, Simon Coveney, has announced that approvals have commenced for dairy investments in the Young Farmer Capital Investment Scheme, and approvals will also issue for Priority 1 dairy equipment cases before Christmas. And finally, a farmer in Shropshire in England was brought to his final resting place by his beloved tractor. According to the Shropshire Star newspaper, Kenneth Edge, a local pig farmer, had bought the tractor brand new over 40 years ago, and it was his pride and joy. The funeral procession involved the late Mr. Edge's tractor pulling a trailer with the coffin on it. Just time for the sheep and cattle prices. Sheep prices, a spring lamb, €5.10 a kilo to 23 kilos. Ewes, €3 a kilo. And cattle prices, steers, €3.90 a kilo. Heifers, €4.05 a kilo. R-grade bulls, €3.90 a kilo. U-grade bulls, €4 a kilo. And O-grade cows, €3.30 a kilo. And R-grade cows, €3.45 a kilo. Farming News and Views is brought to you in association with the Farming Independent. First for Farming News and Views every Tuesday. Well, that's it for another week's edition. From me, Chris Ashmore. Until next week, goodbye.